And welcome back to Coast to Coast. This hour, we'll take your phone calls with Jesse Ventura, his book, Jesse Ventura's Marijuana Manifesto. We'll get right into it when we come back on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. We've got Jesse Ventura with us. Of course, his book is called Jesse Ventura's Marijuana Manifesto. It's a beautiful book, co-written with Jen Hobbs as well. Jesse, a couple quick news items that I want you to react to, and then we'll go to the calls as they line up for you. CNN originally had said that you would have loved to have had Trump name you as a VP candidate. Not true, or change of heart? What happened there?
No. I made that tongue-in-cheek way back when Donald first started disrupting the Republican Party. And I put it, I said, you know, if Donald Trump really wants to get the Republicans in disarray, he should name me the ultimate independent as his running mate. And I had no, I won't join the Republican Party. I had no intention. If Donald would have asked me, I've known him for 25 years. I respect him. I would have given him the respect of considering it, but I wouldn't have did it. And so I want to be clear on that. That was done as simply a joke, just when he was disrupting the Republican Party, which I loved.
Okay, great. And the other one, we talked about this when you were on with me last time. You were awarded $1.8 million in the American Sniper defamation case.
Yep.
The court has tossed out the money, not the fact that you, and I know for a fact you didn't do it for the money. You did it to protect your name. But what's the latest there?
Well, what should really concern people is what they did. It was 2-1 in the appeals court, and they overturned it. They violated a rule that's been in place for 76 years, Judge Shepard and Judge Riley. These are these two appellate court judges that ruled on the 2-1. And the rule is this. They overturned the case on something that was never objected to in the court case. They took it upon themselves to overrule it on their own. No objection, and that dealt with insurance. See, they portrayed to the world that I was taking on the widow and her children and trying to take their money, and that wasn't true at all. Insurance was paying the load. Insurance would have paid any claim that I won, but in the courts, you're not allowed to say that. Well, they did what was called poor mouthing. They got up and they portrayed how much it was costing them in money and this and that, and it wasn't. They were lying. Well, the federal judge has the right to rule. He still wouldn't allow the insurance in until the very end of the case when HarperCollins, the two people from the book company, got up who provided the insurance, and they were there to try to lower my value. The federal judge then said, well, that's conflict of interest. He said, you can bring in insurance on a limited fashion. Here's what it turned out. It was an 11-day trial, four questions on an 11-day trial, and it was part of a 20-page final argument. It was a half a page. And they overturned it that, saying that it poisoned the jury. And when the award was not excessive, well, not only, and the rule states that it happened in final argument, they said you must object so that the judge has the opportunity to rule on it in front of the jury. The jury was dismissed at 11:58 a.m. At 12:02, they objected with the jury gone. The judge overruled their objection, and we were done with it. But they never objected to it in the trial. These two judges are violating a 76-year rule. And then they took away my unjust enrichment because 34 media conglomerates came into the case last spring in the appeals process because they want to be able to profit from wrongdoing, and they don't want to allow you to get any of the profits if they lie about you and defame you. And they came in to the appeals court with a whole new theory. Well, the rules state you can only argue the theory that was argued in the trial. You can't come to the appeals court and argue a new theory. These two judges, Shepard and Riley, allowed them to do that. They threw out the unjust enrichment claim now, so the media can now defame you for profit.
All right. Well, you at least have protected your name, to be sure.
We've been ordered a new trial, Absolutely.
For you mean for everything? Not just the award, but even your own name?
Oh, yeah. We have to go back and try the whole case again. They've ordered a new trial because these two judges didn't like the results. And so they've ordered a whole new trial now. Well, the positive out of that is this. I have something on my side called the truth. And we will win again. We have, you know, I'm not worried about winning again. And when we do, that will prove to the world that Chris Kyle was a liar, won't it? Because not one, but two juries. And the judge, the federal judge, even wrote a 24-page thing in support of the verdict and the award and said in the end substantial evidence supporting the jury and award. Yet these other two judges who didn't hear one second of testimony took it upon themselves to overturn the case and order a complete new trial.
Jeez. All right.
And they overruled the jury of Minnesota. What a slap in the face to all these jurists who did their job. And imagine this, George. How overwhelming must the evidence have been for the jury to side with me against the dead war veteran and his weeping wife?
I know. I know. It was an amazing story. And you took... Look, you took a lot of heat for that when you were out to protect your name. Yeah,
I'm still taking it, and it's all a lie. It never occurred, never happened, and we'll go back and prove it again because a new jury is going to find it the same way.
Same thing. Well, good luck on that, Jess.
Another couple hundred thousand dollars to do it. See, that's what they try to do to you is run you out of money. The only thing that they, when they deposed me, the only thing they wanted were my tax returns. They wanted to see how much I was worth and whether I could sustain their onslaught in court.
All right, my friend. Let's go to the calls.
The average person can't do it.
We've got you, Derek, in St. Louis, as we talk about Jesse Ventura's marijuana manifesto. Go ahead, Derek.
Mr. Norrie, Mr. Ventura, I live here in Missouri, and I always said if they legalize it, I have over 50 acres. I always said I was going to grow it and try to sell it commercially. But what do you know anything about the process? I mean, how does that work in Colorado? Do you get permits and are allowed to grow a certain amount, or how does that actually work?
Well, here's how it works in Colorado. Each individual can go down and apply for a license. In that license, you are given the right to grow 24 plants, 18 of them for commercial and 6 for your own consumption. Now, so that means a couple can grow 48 plants. If you're a retired couple, you can go to Colorado, and if you got enough space, you can grow 48 plants. Each plant will yield about $2,000 in value of marijuana, which means you could be retired, and the two of you could make $96,000 a year just raising 96 pot plants.
Jesse,
not a bad gig, huh?
Not a bad gig at all. Now, the states that are approving this and more are coming online, yep. Is it a tough sell to the legislators?
It's only a tough sell because of the cowardness of the elected officials. No elected official wants to come out and except for Gary Johnson. You know, the president, he's all for it. He'll end the war on drugs. But most of them hide behind it because, see, the government makes huge money off keeping it illegal. They have these seizure laws where they can come in and take your house. They can take your car. They can do it. So it's a profit-making business for them to be able to bust you. And I'll tell you what else. The war on drugs has caused the militarization of our police forces and these problems you see today because it's created, the DEA and all this has created a mentality of shoot first and ask questions later. In the book, we give you examples where the DEA has gone in, shot and killed a person, and then find out later they had the wrong house and no one's ever prosecuted for it.
And in Afghanistan, Jesse, the Taliban that did one thing right, and that was it reduced the poppy seed production, heroin. Now it's out of control again.
Yeah, because we sided with the poppy growers. See, our government is on the side of drug use. but they want it illegal. Oh, yeah, the Taliban had wiped out, and that's why I think you saw that first depression in 2002, 2003, because the laundered money wasn't getting to the banks anymore.
That's right.
And I believe that's what caused it, because then the U.S. went into Afghanistan, the poppy growers sided on our side, started growing all the heroin again, and Afghanistan today provides, I think, 80 to 90% of the world's heroin.
And if it were legal, there'd be no fighting over it.
Exactly. And the point is, though, here's the U.S., stating they're fighting the war on drugs, our government, while all the while they're propping up the poppy growers in Afghanistan. The Taliban had put them out of business.
Blair in Sedona, Arizona. Hey, Blair, we're going to get you your books as soon as I get back.
Thank you very much, George. I had confidence, and thanks, Governor Ventura, for sticking your neck out again.
Carlin. Well, my neck's always out, I think.
I think George Carlin, the late, great George Carlin, made a comment on the war on drugs. He said, mother's milk leads to everything. When do you think the federally insured banking system will get on board? Now it's all a cash basis on the recreational states where it's legalized, Governor.
Well, in order for them to get on board, the federal government has to legalize. Because the banks won't do anything. They can be busted by the federal government for laundering drug money. And that's why the banks have to stay out of the equation right now. That's how they're trying to stop it, is by forbidding the banks to participate in it. See, they're doing everything they can to keep marijuana illegal, and it's up to us, the people, to rise up and say, wait a minute, we're the boss, we want this legal, we think we should be able to use it, it's our business, and we want the industry and the jobs and the economy, and you're supposed to work for us. And that's the message we need to send them, and it's happening state by state right now.
And how many billions are we spending? How much to just keep this battle going?
It's astounding. It's you're talking hundreds. You're talking billions of dollars since Nixon declared the war. Almost a trillion now since Nixon declared the war on drugs way back in 1972. See, Vietnam was ending, so they needed to start a new war. So they chose drugs to be the new war. And like I said, in the time that we've been fighting in Iraq and Afghanistan, more people have died in Mexico on the war on drugs.
Next up, we've got Tommy in Reno, Nevada. Hey, Tommy, thanks for calling. You're on the air with us.
Hey, George. Hey, Jesse. What an honor. That's two of the coolest guys on the planet. Get to talk at the same time, man. That's cool. Hey, I just want to let you know, here in Reno, they legalized the medical this year. And
yep.
They're talking about putting it on a ballot for the recreational, but there's a stipulation, Jesse, and I don't know if you could comment on this, that if you have a marijuana card, you can't get a CCW, and if you got a CCW, you can't get a marijuana card.
What's a CCW?
Concealed
carry
weapon.
George,
concealed weapon. Yeah. Well, yeah. Again, that's your state law doing that, and you people in Nevada need to speak up. Like in Minnesota, when I passed the conceal and carry law shall issue, we did that with alcohol. We said that you can't, not even .08. You have to be 0.0 if you're carrying a weapon. And so if they will apply it the same way to alcohol, then you got to be fair with all of them.
Right.
All the drugs.
I think so, too. Probably just requires some different road testing, but you know what? I think you need to do that.
The difficulty with marijuana is this. The test itself is fraudulent. Because if you smoke a joint on Saturday night, 2 weeks later, you'll still test positive.
Even though you're back to yourself again.
Oh, you're back to yourself the next morning. And see, that's where it's bad. It gets into your fat cells. So if you smoke a joint, you'll test positive 2 weeks later, and you're not under the influence of marijuana 2 weeks later. So the tests themselves do not give an accurate reading as to whether the person is being affected, their brain is being affected by the marijuana or not.
So that's why some companies, if they are hiring you, they drug test you, and if you're going to go in for an interview, you better stop way in advance, right?
Yeah, absolutely, because the drug test is unfair. If you're drinking, hell, you can get bombed the night before, and it'll be out of your system the next day, and drink a lot of water, and you'll go in, and you'll be fine with alcohol.
That's
you'll
right.
You'll probably have a hangover. That's the other good thing. Marijuana don't give you a hangover.
Next up, we've got Don in Seattle, Washington. Hey, Don, go ahead.
Hi, gentlemen. Thanks for taking my
call. Sure thing.
The reason I called, and this has just blown my mind, is in Washington State, about a couple of years ago, it became legal recreationally. And I'm disabled, receiving housing assistance from the federal government. Shortly after it went legal for recreational use, I received a letter in the mail that said if I ever tested positive for THC, I would lose my housing, I could be arrested, and I would get fined and all kinds of crazy things. And the only thing that helps my physical problems is marijuana, and I have to get it with just the CBD in it. And
right.
I'm wondering what Mr. Ventura has to say about, you know, that kind of funding, even though it's being facilitated by the state and it's legal here.
Well, because it's not truly legal yet. Even Washington, even Colorado, and I'll give you the example. Okay, I can go to the state of Colorado and I can buy as many cigarettes as I want. I could fill up a semi-truck with cigarettes and nobody'd say a thing. I could drive to a liquor store with a semi-truck and I could buy every bottle of booze in that liquor store, load it on the truck and take it. Nobody would say anything. Yet, marijuana, if you live in Colorado, I think the most you can buy is an ounce at one time. And if you're a visitor to Colorado, the most you can buy is a half an ounce at any one time. Now, if it were true freedom, it should be treated the same as tobacco, the same as alcohol, and there should be no limit on how much you want to purchase. That's your business. So there's still huge strides that need to take place to bring about the actual freedom of being able, like this lady, to be able to use marijuana for her own health purposes and a particular standard of life. And the government should not be involved in it at all. What right do they have to tell you what you can or cannot put in your body? It's your body, and they don't own you. You do in a free society.
Jesse, at what point did you jump on this bandwagon?
Well, I've been on it for years. You know, I tried to get hemp legalized in Minnesota when I was governor, and I couldn't even get a Democrat or Republican to hardly carry the bill. So, you know, I've been on this for a long, long time because to me, you know, I grew up in the 60s, and I'll tell it to you this, George. I've misbehaved 10 times worse on alcohol than I ever have on marijuana.
Well, and I've got to tell you, the others.
If I were given the choice of going to a marijuana party or a drinking party, I would choose the marijuana party immediately because I know there wouldn't be violence there. No one would throw up on me, and I wouldn't get a hangover the next day.
And those who are opposed to marijuana have done a brilliant job, as Hearst did, making you think it was the product of the devil. We're going to come back with final calls with Jesse Ventura in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And next hour, Ben Mezrach joins us as we talk about the 37th parallel, the secret behind America's UFO highway. Get ready for that. But when we come back in a moment, we're going to take final phone calls with Jesse Ventura as we talk about his work, Jesse Ventura's Marijuana Manifesto. And I really got to congratulate him for sticking his neck out on this subject, because not a lot of people do. They shy away from it. They really do. And this is something that really needs to be changed in America. We're wasting money. People are in jail for these petty crimes, and it's ludicrous. We'll be back in a moment. And welcome back to Coast, Jesse Ventura back with us in Jesse's book, Marijuana Manifesto. Jesse, is the book out yet?
Yeah, it came out today.
Perfect timing, because I got my advanced copy a couple weeks ago in L.A. and brought it with me, read it on the plane coming over here. and another great job. I mean, you touch the pulse of the American people. You really do. Do you miss public office at all?
Well, yes and no. You know, it's yeah, you miss it because, like, when you're the governor of Minnesota, nobody can tell you what to do.
At least when you're in Minnesota.
Well, actually, I'll correct that. I was still volunteer high school football coaching, so the head coach was the only one who could tell me what to do. I was his assistant, and I did coach two more years during my term.
Did you enjoy that? That was fun for you.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, and you're also proud of accomplishments that you do. You know, I revamped the whole property tax system in my 4 years. I put in the first line of mass transit, light rail. They've now added two more to it. Hopefully they'll add some more. And, you know, I redid the license plates. And plus my 4 years, we had a budget surplus 3 out of the 4 years, and I gave people checks in the mail.
Did you really? You mean it went back to the constituents?
Absolutely. I'm the only one that's ever did it.
How cool is that?
Well, I ran on that because the year before I ran, they had this, in the 90s, everybody was making money, and the government would have billions of dollars in surplus, and they didn't give it back. They'd spend it like kids in a candy store. And so when I got in office, we had surpluses the first 3 years, and the people named them Jesse checks.
What did they range from? How much?
Well, they ranged from $200 to $300 all the way up to about $2,500.
How cool is that?
And you didn't have to declare it because I made it a sales tax rebate. I had to fight the Republicans because the Republicans wanted to be an income tax rebate. And I said, why would you want to do that? That's our money. Then we have to declare it, and we have to give a third of it to the federal government.
That's right.
If you make it a sales tax rebate, they can keep the money. Two funny stories. A buddy of mine said, hey, my friend at work wanted to tell you thanks. I said, for what? He said he took his rebate check and went down and bought a pallet of beer. You know, we stick the forklift in and they lift it up. He said, so the governor bought me my beer for the whole summer.
I love
it. And another elderly woman took her check and she bought a new lawnmower and she named it after me.
And what was it called?
Oh, Jesse, the lawnmower.
Jesse, the lawnmower.
And she passed away. And when I found out she did, I went to her funeral, and her son was astounded. He said, what are you doing here? I said, hey, how could I not go to the funeral of a friend of mine's next-door neighbor? I said, how could I not go to the funeral to the woman who named her lawnmower after me?
That is something. I love
it. You know, and so her son was pretty touched, and I said, she was a wonderful woman. But she took her check. She needed a new lawnmower. See, and that stimulates the economy. People are going to take that money and spend it.
I've always thought that money from the Alaska pipeline should be used to give. I think the Alaskans are getting a check, but the whole country should.
Well, you know, I can't speak to that, but all I know is that, you know, when government overtaxes you, they should give the money back to the taxpayers.
Ah, they sure should.
Not spend it like kids in a candy store. Minnesota had I forget how many billion surplus this year, and right away people started saying, hey, and they said, oh, no, there'll be no rebates.
Keep the money. Let's go to Dominic in Colorado Springs, Colorado. Dominic, go ahead.
Hello, sir. How are you guys doing?
Good, Dom. Thank you.
Well, I'd like to speak on the marijuana. I live in Colorado, and it's very different out here. Like, it's booming out here. And so many people out here smoke it. I smoke it. And, like, it's different in different parts of Colorado. Like, in the Springs, you have to have a recreational card. And you can still, like, get a handgun. But, well, you cannot if you have a recreation or a card to smoke. You can't get a license for your gun. But you can just take a trip to Denver where you're 21 and just go into a dispensary and get some, you know?
And just buy it for recreational purposes, right?
Correct. So either way, you can still, you know, obtain a handgun. And then it's really booming out here because I don't know if you keep up with it, but like on 420, the whole festival is in downtown Denver. Everybody.
Yeah. Oh, that's what I hear. Let me ask you, Dominic, when you drive, have you smoked? And does it affect you?
No. If I'd say what you were talking earlier, it enhances. If you ask me, from my point of view, it enhances me. It makes everything sharper because you're more aware. If you ask me, you're more aware of what you're doing. And
it doesn't. Does it make your heart flutter or skip a beat or anything like that?
I'll say, like, if you're new to it, you probably will be like that. You know, nervous, make your heart skip, like paranoid. But as you continue to smoke and continue to do it on a daily basis or more common, you'll get used to it. You know, it just becomes one of those things where it relaxes you. When you get off of work, you're like, okay, I can smoke.
Interesting. All right, thanks for sharing that story. You know, Jesse, I don't drink coffee. I'm one of the few that probably doesn't.
Because I don't either, George. You and I are brethren.
The caffeine makes my heart skip beats, and I hate the feeling.
You know what did it for me? The taste.
Yeah.
I've had two sips of coffee in my life and spit it out both times.
Yeah, I don't like the taste either. I'll go with a bottle of water in the morning. That'll be it.
I don't drink any. I don't consume anything with caffeine in it. I'm hyper enough. I don't need caffeine.
Let's go to Gary in Vancouver, British Columbia, on the international line. Hi, Gary. Go ahead.
I can't believe I'm talking to Jesse Ventura. I just cannot believe this. I actually got through. Jesse, I actually have one question, but it's a two-parter. In the last 8 years, I've had a very serious, not life-threatening, but life-altering medical problem. I have nerve damage. The pain can be so debilitating that I sometimes can't even get out of bed. Now, I don't like the smell of marijuana, but I'd like to know whether or not you can eat it, and if you do eat it, like as in cookies or brownies, does it make the brownies taste funny? And also, the other thing, and I don't know if you can answer this or not, but can you tell me whether or not you can inject it like that of heroin or that kind of thing?
I don't think you want to mess with needles.
Okay.
I don't know if you can or not, but as far as the eating goes, believe it or not, marijuana is nutritious. We have the last chapter in my book tells you it is all about cooking it and using it and baking it and using it in different manners. And it's actually, you can live off it. It's nutritious. It's like a vegetable. It has vitamins. It has all of that, all sorts of stuff in it. And if you don't like the smell of it and all that, you certainly can use it in an alternative method by eating it. Many people do. And I believe even Governor Johnson said that's how he uses it.
Guys, thank you so much. And George, you're very cool, too. You're very cool.
Thanks. I appreciate you being on the show. You know, Jesse, it's just something that it's growing, isn't it? This push to get this legalized.
Well, and it should, because as I said, it was the backbone of our country for 160 years. Until, because of political reasons, it was turned into some sort of devil weed. And it's industry waiting to happen. It's jobs waiting to happen. It's a new revenue source for government. That's why the states, they're going to look at Colorado. They're going to look at Washington, Oregon, and all these other places. They're going to see how much money it's making. Then you watch the politicians get on board because they love to spend your money.
Yes, they do. Eugene is in Amarillo, Texas now, east of the Rockies. Eugene, you're on with us. Go ahead.
Thanks, George, for taking my call.
You're very welcome.
First-time caller. I just wanted to tell Jesse that if it wasn't for marijuana, that my son would not be alive today. He's 22 years old now. His mother suffered with severe morning sickness. And she miscarried 6 times before this, and her grandmother told her that she needed to start smoking marijuana. And she smoked about an average of maybe a joint and a half a week. And it completely cleared up her morning sickness, and she carried full term.
And
he was one of the healthiest babies born. She strictly refused all vitamin shots and everything else. And smoked marijuana, ate spinach, took a prenatal vitamin, and one of the healthiest kids in the past 50 years.
Well, you know, yours is another story of marijuana medically helping someone achieve something, and the list goes on and on. In my book, we cite all sorts of cases. And people need to understand that this plant that grows is so remarkable, and it's so renewable, and it has so many things that we can gain and get from it, and it grows 15 feet in the summer. Like when you look at paper, a tree only grows a foot a year. And when you cut it down, a marijuana will grow 15 feet, and it'll grow next year as long as it seeds. It rejuvenates itself. And we need to be exploiting this plant instead of eradicating it.
It grows that tall, huh?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. In one season, it can grow 10 feet, hemp and all that. Sure, it can grow 10 to 15 feet high.
Wow.
From spring to fall. And then the seeds fall off, the plant dies, and new ones grow next year.
Who's behind the push now to try to get it legalized? Are some businesses savvy enough to understand, hey, there's a lot of money to be made here?
Well, the problem is this, and here's where the hypocrisy of the government. The government's already granted copyright and all that to big corporations to cultivate it when it becomes legal. But the people who want marijuana don't want that, because that way it'll be like pharma will own it and the prices will control it. Where if you just have pure legalization, like take my mom. I grew up in South Minneapolis, and inner city, yet every year my mom had a garden with tomatoes, and we would eat fresh tomatoes all summer long from the garden.
They were the best.
Same thing with marijuana. So the poor people would have access to the plant without having to pay the government.
Uh-huh.
That's the big sticking point, is the government wants their cut. George, it's like prostitution. Let me explain.
Please.
Two consenting adults can have any type of sex they want, right?
They should.
Right. So the only thing that makes prostitution illegal is the exchange of money.
Correct.
Well, there you got it. The government wants to be the pimp. The same thing holds true with marijuana. They don't want you to have the right to grow it in your backyard, because then they can't profit from it, and their corporations can't profit from it, because you could be self-sustainable, grow your own plants, provide it for yourself, and you wouldn't have to buy it from a corporation or from the government and pay them. That's the big sticking point. Follow the money.
It's all about that. Let's go to DeJ in Los Angeles, California. Hi there. You're welcome to the show.
George, thank you so much for having me. What a pleasure to speak with both of you. I've been listening for 20 years to Coast to Coast.
Very welcome. What a lovely first name. I can't pronounce it right, but it's great.
Thank you very much. I have been a very long time cannabis activist. I got involved in 1992. Since then, I've been a compliance consultant, a court qualified expert. I've worked on numerous campaigns. I'm actually a friend and colleague of Steve Covey's. And just like what both of you were talking about earlier, this is what we're dealing with in California right now, is this Proposition 64 is actually a very harmful initiative. 100% of all the tax revenue and all the fees that would be generated by this potential legalization effort in California goes only to enforcement. Just like in Colorado, how they're benefiting and it's going to the general fund, not one penny of Proposition 64 would benefit a single Californian. The bill is written so 100% of all the taxes and fees go to the enforcement mechanism set up for this. And they've created a whole bunch of new taxes and a bunch of new criminal penalties. We're calling it, you know, recriminalization, fake legalization. So while I support legalization along with my colleagues, what we're seeing in California is entities like Monsanto, GW Pharmaceutical, and RJ Reynolds are coming in and trying to take this industry from the mom and pops. And in California, this is huge. We have a pre-existing industry that's been thriving for decades, and this Prop 64 is actually going to be very harmful. It overturns our medical marijuana laws. It turns medical into recreational. And I think people like Sean Parker and George Soros know that people aren't going to read the 62-page initiative, and we know that someone like Sean Parker is going to spend millions on advertising and confuse and try to fool the voters in California.
And it works.
Yep, and it works. That's what that's their tactic of keeping it illegal now. Is they and that's like what happened in Ohio. Ohio voted it down because they only had two corporations that would be allowed to produce the marijuana. So what you have is the government trying to benefit the big corporations, and as the caller said, put the mom and pop people out of business. That's the real sticking point here. That's why we, the people, have to stick together and make it our initiative and tell the government and let them know. You know, George, I can't believe how people in this country are such lemmings. They don't realize we're the boss.
Yes, we are.
The government. Why do we let them dictate to us? We should be telling them what to do.
That's slowly changing, Jesse. Not fast enough, but it's happening. What kind of publicity are you getting from some of the bigger media outlets with this book?
I'm essentially pretty much blackballed by most of the big media outlets. It's been that way for me ever since the Chris Kyle thing.
Wow.
You know, I worked for Aura TV. Well, the boss of Aura TV was a Mexican. No one in the U.S. would hire me. I now signed. I can only exercise my free speech. Believe it or not, I'm going on RT America, Russian television. The Russians will let Jesse Ventura speak freely. The United States won't.
Isn't that amazing? Jesse, thanks for being on the program again. You're always welcome, my friend.
Thank you, George. Great to do your show. Keep up the great work and keep the conversations going. We got to have it.
Jesse Ventura's Marijuana Manifesto. And I got to tell you, folks, when I saw somebody in my studio in St. Louis back 16, 17 years ago crying in the studio because they could not take prescription drugs and they had to switch to marijuana because of the pain they were in and it saved their life, I realized then that there's something here that Americans need to be able to pick and choose on their own. That's why I support marijuana for medicinal purposes, and you know what? Recreational, take these people out of jail. They shouldn't be in there. I'm George Norrie. We'll be back in a moment as we go down the UFO highway.